Hi guys, and welcome to episode 11 of the Northern Rugby Podcast. Today we will be chatting to Premiership legend Jamie Gopworth, who has had spells in Super Rugby, Premiership Rugby and the Pro 14 as well. After representing the Hurricanes and the Blues in Super Rugby, Jamie moved across to the North East with Newcastle Falcons, being top scorer in three of his four seasons and helping the club to win promotion back to the Premiership following relegation in 2012. He then moved across to Leinster to fill the shoes of Johnny Sexton, who had left for France, and picked up a Pro 12 winner's medal in his first season. He has since moved back to England with Wasps, where he's won a Premiership Player of the Year award, as well as helping Wasps to two Premiership finals. Jamie talks us through playing rugby all over the world, playing against the Lions with the Hurricanes, Barbarians Honours, and his plans for the future. Let's get straight into it and see what Jamie had to say.
Morning, Jimmy.
Morning, how are you?
I'm very good, mate. How are you?
Not too bad.
Good stuff. How's things been recently for you?
It's been all right. Obviously, they had a little break before we get back into training, but then halted from lockdown, so we've got our holidays been cut short.
Not ideal, is it?
No, not ideal when you've only got 2.5 weeks off before you start training again, so it's not ideal, but it is what it is.
And so are you literally back in training now?
No, back in on Thursday next week, and then we play the week after.
And what's it like? Because obviously you guys can't have any like kind of pre-season friendlies or anything, so is it a bit strange?
Don't know yet. Once we're back in, it's just going to be straight playing again, so it's a bit weird because we just played the final a couple of weeks ago, so it's straight back in. It's like it's just the same season, really.
Yeah, it's all a bit weird, except for us at the Falcons. We're playing our first game tomorrow in, what, about 8-9 months?
I know, yeah. Jeez, the boys would be chomping at the bits to do that.
So, yeah, it's all been a very weird year, hasn't it? But thanks very much for coming on the podcast with us.
No worries.
Always good to have a legend like yourself on. We typically just have a fairly laid-back look at your career right from the beginning. So let's go back to the young Jamie Gopworth back in New Zealand. Just tell us about how you got your start in rugby and when you first went professional.
Yeah, well, obviously, in New Zealand, you grow up and you're born pretty much with a rugby ball. So it was inevitable that I'd fall in love with the game. And, I just remember as a young kid, every Saturday going down to the local ground and playing, and then being a ball boy for my dad's team that he was playing, but then he was coaching at. I just used to love it. So I used to be at rugby ground from 8:30 in the morning till sometimes 2 in the morning, by the time the old man and all them finished drinking in the pub, in the club rooms, all us kids would still be out playing on the main perch and kicking rugby balls, and that was just the way of life. That was our weekends, and I was lucky enough to go to a decent rugby school in New Plymouth Boys High, and I was a boarder up there, and you know the rugby team's pretty renowned up there. It's pretty special place to play at the Gully Ground, and
yeah,
sort of just made my way through that, and managed to play a few rep teams for Taranaki, which is pretty cool. And then, you know, obviously it was probably around, I don't know, 14, 15 years old, I sort of thought, you know, I really want to try and push myself as much as I can. So, you know, when I started getting 15, 16, into 17, started getting those, you know, sort of into the rep, big rep teams, which was a sort of stepping stone in New Zealand rugby. It was I just went on from there, really, and had a pretty good time at school, and you know, had some great players and some great mates. I used to play some really good rugby, and managed to, I think it was what, 2001 was my last year of school. Jeez, that's going back a bit. made the New Zealand schools team, which was pretty cool. So we played England, which was gave them a good hiding, which we had a pretty good team going back then, and some pretty big stars that have gone on to represent New Zealand. And then after that, it was I sort of, when I was in my last year of school, there was talks of trying to get me to play for Taranaki, the NPC team. But there was chats that I was too young. You know, I was still at school, you know, playing against all the All Blacks, and so to speak, was just a little bit too much. So that didn't really happen. But then Wellington offered me an academy contract to go down to Wellington straight out of school. So for me, I was looking at that going, hang on a minute, who's in Wellington? Okay, there's Jonah Lomu, there's Christian Cullen, there's Tana Umanga. And then pretty much I was gone. So it was, you know, the opportunity to rub shoulders with those kind of guys was just too good to turn down.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Pretty much all the biggest stars were playing for Wellington at that stage. So I thought, as a young kid, I was like, oh man, this is too good to be true. So I headed off down to Wellington in 2002, and went there with the got in with the academy and started playing for Petone Rugby Club, which Tane played at, which was you know, I got to meet him. He obviously didn't play too much club rugby, but I was lucky enough to have a great intake with myself, Piti Wepu, Tamati Allison, Namia Tialata, guys like this was in my intake in 2002, which is pretty cool. So we sort of had a really good group, and there's a few of us that got to play for Wellington in 2002. It's like sort of like a pre-season game, but we played against Manawatu, and it was a cap. So that was awesome. Obviously, not too many of the stars were playing in that game, but to get the first taste of first class rugby was you know, just a great stepping stone, and learned a lot. So officially, I got capped in 2002 for Wellington, as a young fella, and then went on to make the full team squad in 2003.
What do you kind of remember about making your debut, like your full official debut?
Obviously, firstly getting announced in the team was so awesome. I'd still remember that first day turning up to training. We used to train out at Upper Hutt, which is, you know, a little place out of Wellington, and you know, I got Christian Cullen, Jonah Lomu, these guys turning up, and I was just like, wow, like this is amazing. And then to play my first game was just surreal. It was just, I can't even remember who I played against. It was that long ago. But I had some great guys to learn off. David Holwell was the 10 when I was there. I also had Ricky Flutie. So I got to learn off all these guys for a long time. And, you know, I didn't actually... Funny thing, I didn't actually start a game for Wellington other than the Wellington 15 game where I capped in 2002. For the first, 03, 04, 2 years, I was just came off the bench, which, you know, in hindsight, was such a good learning curve for me. I got to learn so much, and I wasn't thrust straight into the team like that. So I sort of done my apprenticeship, so to speak.
Yeah.
And to learn off all these guys. And funnily enough, my first start for Wellington was against the British and Irish Lions in 2005.
Wow, that's a good story to tell. How did that game go?
Which is pretty cool. It was pretty, like, we played against their full test team because it was a week out before the first test.
Yeah.
And it was, I think, remember, it was horrendous conditions. And it was pretty tight there for a while, and then they got a couple runaway tries, and I think it's ended up being pretty comfortable to them. But you know, just going into the change room afterwards, and you know, I swapped jerseys with Johnny Wilkinson, and you know, having chats with all these guys, it's the first time obviously I'd met some of these big stars, and it was just you know, one of those games you'll never forget, and pretty memorable in sort of my career with Wellington.
And then, obviously, you stay with Wellington for the next couple of years, but eventually you do move to the Blues. So how did the move to Auckland come around?
Yeah, so obviously, well, at the back end of 2004, I made the Hurricanes. So that 2005, I actually started a game for, I started for the Hurricanes before I started for Wellington, which was pretty pretty weird. But yeah, I loved my time at the Hurricanes, especially that 2005 season. My first season was really good, and you know, got an All Black trial on the back of it, and that was awesome. But yeah, I'd been there what 2005, 6, 7, 8. And I just like it was a weird one because I was like pretty much the only one of the only backs in the team that wasn't an All Black. So there was always a lot of pressure around sort of what I was doing, and you know, there were certain coaches that had different viewpoints, and I just felt like I just needed a new challenge, and that's why I sort of moved from Wellington up to North Harbour first and played the NPC, and it just gave me a bit of refreshed mind of, you know, different outlook on rugby, and, you know, got picked up from the Blues, and again, another sort of different way of playing and different coaches, and really enjoyed it. So it's just like, just to get a different... sort of a different mindset on how things are done, really, was why I moved.
And you mentioned getting the trial with the All Blacks as well. So at this point, when you're at the Blues, you've already been capped by the under-21s and the junior All Blacks, is that right?
Yeah.
And how close did you come to the main All Black side?
Well, obviously, I was still always floating around it. You know, unfortunate for me, I was just stuck behind, you know, I had Andrew Mertens, Dan Carter, Nick Evans, Luke McAllister, Stephen Donald and myself were sort of all the guys going for those two spots. So it was a massive backlog, and the problem was we're all around the same age. And you know, with Dan Carter and Nick Evans were once Andrew Mertens moved on, it was Dan Carter and Nick Evans for a long time. And I just thought my reasons for moving overseas was like, I'm just never, you know, these two guys, unless there's massive injuries, you know, we're not really going to get a look in. So I thought I was still young enough. I had a young daughter. My young daughter was just born. I thought, what a time to go and explore the other side of the world.
Absolutely, and obviously the Falcons is where you wind up. But at that time, were there offers coming in from anywhere else, or what made you settle on the Northeast?
Yeah, I had a few offers around. It pretty much came down to Perpignan or Newcastle. And whenever I tell people that, they're like, "What? You going south of France to Newcastle? Like, are you mad?" And then, but the biggest draw was there was a lot of Kiwi guys up there, and one of my really good mates, Tane Tuipulotu, was there, and his wife and my wife were friends as well. So it's a way up between, I've got a young family, do I go French speaking and totally out of this, you know, comfort zone, or do I, for the first time overseas, do I go somewhere where it's English speaking, I know people, and the guys that were Newcastle, so Carl Heyman, Mark Sorensen, Tane Tuipulotu, these guys that I'd known, they sort of said, "Look, it's a pretty awesome place up here. The people are great." So it was pretty easy decision to come up.
And coming from New Zealand, what was your kind of first impression of the Northeast and Newcastle?
Cold.
Yeah.
It was freezing. But, you know, it was very like, because I love surfing, and right by the coast, it was pretty ideal for me. But the people, once you got to understand most of the people, yeah, with the accent, was the people were just awesome. Made you feel really welcome, you know, very friendly. And that just made our sort of settling in period so much easier.
And was there anybody in the squad who kind of took you under their wing and showed you where all the good pubs are?
Yeah, well, obviously we had all the Kiwi boys there, and then our sort of Englishman, we made a Kiwi, Johnny Golding. We got him into surfing, and so we became good mates and still are today. So, you know, he was a good friend to have around those around that area.
Good stuff. And in terms of the actual rugby itself, when you get in the team and you start playing, what did you make of English rugby?
Yeah, it was very different. It took me a bit to get used to. Obviously, coming from Super Rugby, it was very fast, and obviously the weather sort of helped that as well. But sort of back, 2009 or 2010, it was that season. It was very much at the start. It was a lot of sort of 10-man rugby. It was lots about mauls and scrummaging and kicking for field position, kicking for posts, and it sort of, I really had to adapt my game, and I think I learned a hell of a lot about myself as a player. Especially, I had to very, very quickly, because it was just a very defense-orientated mindset. You know, the biggest, you know, one I had to try and get my head around was the way teams talked about, oh, we're going away to here. Oh, it's so hard. It's really hard to go play away. You know, Leicester Tigers away. Oh my God, it's really hard. Whereas I came from, you know, in New Zealand, when you're going away to, it's just an away match. It's a match. It's, you know, yeah, that's how it was. The mentality was, oh, we're going away. Oh, sweet. A little trip away. We're going to have a good game. We'll have a few beers afterwards. Whereas the mindset was just like, oh my God, it's so hard to play away here. You just got to win at home, which took me a while to really grasp at that, because it's just totally different mindset. And the rugby was just all about defence. It was very physical, which thankfully has changed so much over the last few years I've been involved. But yeah, I had to grow up pretty quickly and learn how to really, I suppose, dictate a game with my boot.
Yeah, because you were the league's top scorer in your first two seasons, and obviously coming in, taking over from Johnny Wilkinson, did you kind of put any emphasis on yourself to, you know, become a really, really, really good kicker, or did that just kind of come naturally to you?
No, it's just natural. I'd always been a decent kicker. Obviously, there was the whole pressure about, oh, you're fully in Johnny's boots, but yeah, I'm pretty laid back kind of dude, and everyone that knows me would agree. So I just tried to take, you know, tried to put my stamp on things, and I knew there was going to be a bit of pressure, and I probably took the fans a few months to get used to my sort of style of playing compared to Johnny's. And but that's what I said to myself. I was still young as, and I was like, well, I have to put my own stamp on things here and try and do the best for the team. And you know, it was I was very lucky. We had a really pretty dominant forward pack, so it was literally line out, drive, kick points, scrum, penalty, kick points, and that was sort of how our first few years was going.
And eventually we roll around to the 11-12 season, and the Falcons wind up getting relegated. What do you kind of remember about that season?
Yeah, it was a crazy season. Obviously, we had a change of coach mid-season when Gary Gold came in, and you know, it was sort of tasked with this. Oh, you're going to try and, you know, we're pretty much relegated by Christmas. We hadn't had a great start, and then Gary Gold came in, and his whole thing was just like, look, I'm going to try and save you. It's not going to be pretty rugby, but we're going to do whatever it takes to win. And we had a real change of mindset. It was really weird. Like, we weren't literally, it was like, sorry, lads, you're not allowed to play any rugby in your own half. Like, that's just it. Like, if you want to win games, we can't be playing any rugby in our own half. So it was a bit of a mindset change. But we all sort of went into it, and geez, we nearly pulled it off. It was a crazy turnaround. We won some awesome games, and it literally came down to the second to last week. Wasps were playing Bath, and Sam Vesti was going in for a try, and he was gloating, celebrating with his arms in the air. And I think it was for their bonus point try, which would have given them championships rugby in the Heineken Cup for the following season.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have meant that we had to go to Wasp the next week and just win to secure promotion, and Wasp would have got relegated. But Tom Vandell came from behind as Sam Vesey was gloating and hit him hard, held him up or knocked the ball on, and he didn't score. So that meant, first of all, that Bath didn't get champion Heineken Rugby, and Gary Gold was going to be their coach next year, so he wasn't happy. And and it meant that we had to go down to Wasp and win, I can't remember, by like 20-something points to save being relegated. And it was really weird, man. It was like we won their game. It was pretty close, but we ended up winning the game, but we got relegated. So it was just such a weird feeling, like to come so close of a remarkable, sort of finish to the season, to staying up, not getting relegated, to winning the last game and just coming up short on points was pretty tough to take, to be honest.
Yeah, and obviously it's something we've experienced recently again as well. But when it all happened and when the dust kind of all settled and it was confirmed that Falcons were going down, was there any kind of, like looking elsewhere, like maybe you didn't want to be in the championship, or did you just think, look, I'm just going to give this another season and help them get back to where they need to be?
So I think I was coming out of contract that year as we were getting in the relegation year. So I had quite a few offers from other clubs to go to different places. And I was weighing it up. Do I go? But I don't know. I'm quite I know there's no loyalty left in the game of rugby, but I am quite a loyal person. And it was like, I didn't want to be seen as one of these guys as like, as soon as the team gets relegated, you're gone. And yeah. I'd given 3 good years to the Falcons, and we'd gone through some ups and downs, and we'd been fighting the whole time. And I know it was one of those ones, is like, do I go to another Premiership club or France or wherever and just cruise and be known as that dude who just they got relegated, so he didn't want to handle it, so he bailed. So I decided to stay, I want to fight and get the guys back to, northeast. The northeast needs rugby in the Premiership, so yeah. That was my whole thing of fighting and trying to win the championship. And I had some good mates there as well, so it was not a hard decision in the end to stay.
And the championship is a pretty unique league. It's got some weird and wonderful teams in it. What was your impression after 3 years of Premiership rugby? What was it like going down to the championship?
It's gritty. It's proper. It's just proper old school grassroots rugby. Some of your grounds you go to, like these porter cabins. I remember we played Leeds, and it was when Headingley had a disease in their pitch, so they moved a couple of places, and we played at Otley. Now, Otley's a famous, that I think they beat the All Blacks there way back in the day. It's a pretty famous mm-hmm. Ground. Anyway, we kicked off, and the weather was all right. The pitch was okay. We scored like in the literally first 5-10 minutes. Everything was going grand, and then the heavens open, and by halftime, you didn't know who was who. It was just, I think we've got all photos after the game, and it's just everyone's covered from head to toe in mud, and ended up being like really close to the game because you couldn't play. You literally couldn't run. I think there was guys tackling their own players, like didn't know who was who. So that was a massive eye-opener, playing professional rugby and sort of old school, and old school sort of conditions was pretty funny when I look back at it.
And the season winds up going very well. The Falcons go unbeaten for most of it. I think they lost on the last day of the regular season to Bristol. But then the old school playoff system comes in, and it was tight. Like, the Falcons, didn't exactly cruise through those playoffs. So what was that like for the team?
Yeah, I think going through, if it was the old, if it was the new system where you just win and you get promoted, we were probably promoted by Christmas. You know, we'd won all our games except the last one, and then there's this home and away thing going on. And looking back, I think we played too many of our so-called frontliners too much, because coming into those things, there was guys that were pretty buggered, and we might have had a couple of injuries. And Leeds, I think they beat us their first game away when we played at their place, and then the nerves start going a bit, because you are the form team, you're the team that should go up, everyone wants to beat you. And I remember after that first one, it was a bit like, hang on a minute, shit, we have to really knuckle down here. And fortunate enough, we won the second leg against Leeds and took Bedford in the final, and ended up being pretty comfortable in the final. But it's just home and away, semis and finals, it's crazy. Like, I don't know who thought of that. It was just like, to get promoted, like, all it takes is two games and you're done. That's it. It could go your whole season winning all the games, and came down to that. There's a lot of pressure, but thankfully, that last game at home against Bedford, we put them to the sword and lifted the trophy.
Yeah, and you get the Falcons back to the Premiership where they need to be, and then the move to Leinster comes about. So how did that happen, and when did Leinster approach you, and how did you make that decision?
Yeah, so when the Olympics were on, New Zealand were playing Brazil in the football up in Newcastle, and Joe Smith, he coached me in New Zealand schools. And he got in touch, and he was like, oh, I'm coming over, because I think his nephew was the goalkeeper. He said, oh, let's catch up for a beer. Haven't seen you for a while. And this was before anything had come about, and he was still at Leinster, and he was like, look, I don't know what I'm doing next year. I think I might stay at Leinster, but in the future, what's your plans? And I said, oh, look, I don't know. I'm just sort of cruising, and whatever happens, happens. And he was like, well, if I go somewhere else, or, he didn't know what he was doing, we'll keep in touch, because I'm keen to take you with me or whatever, if you want to look at other options. And that was about it. And then literally a few weeks later, he rings me up and says, oh, look, Johnny Sexton's going to France. How do you fancy coming over to Leinster? And I'm like, okay, I've just got promoted from the Championship. I've got an opportunity to go to the European Champions. What do I do? Yeah, mate, where's the dotted line? I'm coming. Like, it was a no-brainer. And I had signed a three-year deal with the Falcons, but I'd had a sort of an option. But when I went to the coaches and the owner, Seymour, and said, look, this is too good of an opportunity for me. They were really good about it. They said, of course, I'm not going to hold you back to going to European Champions. So, I signed for them. And then, but then Joe Schmidt rings me up and goes, so, yeah, I still want you to come, but I've signed for the Irish job. So I won't be coaching you, but the new coach coming in, Matt O'Connor, still wants you to go. So thankfully it all worked out.
Yeah, and obviously you go across in that first season, and it's quite successful. Leinster win the Pro 12 title, as it was then. You're playing with Brian O'Driscoll in his last season. Like, what was all that like?
Yeah, it was awesome. Like, as soon as I walked in the building, I knew it was just totally different setup. Very focused, very professional, and you could see why they had a lot of success. And it was just a great environment, great team to be involved with, always striving for excellence and winning things. And yeah, to win the cup at the pro was it Pro 12 back then, or Pro 14, whatever it was awesome. And to be involved with some great players like Darcy and O'Driscoll, these guys have been, one of the best centre pairing in the world rugby, and to play alongside them, and obviously to play in Dricko's last game, to be involved with that was something pretty special. And you know, I've been like fortunate enough to play with some very, very good players, and you know, to these two were class act, and we had some great success.
And I just wanted to ask about the following season. So the 14-15 season with Leinster, in the league terms, it was quite strange because they finished fifth, which for them, you know, was a big failure because they'd been so successful in the 5 years before, and they've been very successful since. So in your eyes, what was the cause for like the league form in that season?
Yeah, we had a bit of it. There's a bit of a changing in the guard with different people coming in and out, but it was just a really weird season. Like, I remember one game against Dragons at home. There was no TMO for some reason. Like, it was the first game ever there was no TMO. So the ref had to do it by himself, and he was a young Welsh ref, and I think it was only his first or second, you know, very low-numbered refereeing games under his belt. And we scored, like, looking back on the review, we scored three tries, and he called them held up. And little things like that just did not go our way. And I think that was towards the back end of the season. If we got that, we would have finished in fourth or third, and it would have been okay. But just really bizarre things just didn't go our way. And but in saying that, we blooded a lot of new guys. So, you know, the young kids like the Ringroses and whatever, these guys were training with us as the academies, and some of them getting opportunities to play. So, you know, looking back now, it's probably a good season for some of these young guys that are starring now for Ireland. So, but it was, we got a lot of shit for it. Obviously, Matt O'Connor lost his job for it. It was, you know, just Leinster were known as those teams that don't finish out of the top four.
Yeah, and I guess on the flip side of that, that season you almost made the Heineken Cup final. You had one of the maddest games I've ever seen against Toulon. What do you kind of remember about that one?
Yeah, it was a hell of a game in Marseille. It was we really fancied our chances, and I think it was probably the two top. That was probably the final that everyone was expecting right there as a semi final. The two strongest teams, and it was to go. Well, we went extra time, and just before extra time, I remember I had an opportunity for a drop goal, and it literally shaved the post. And you know, what could have been, but you know, that's rugby. And then going into the extra time, and all I remember is being on the left hand side and seeing Brian Hobana pick off an intercept and trying to chase him down, thinking, oh, Jesus, there it is. Like, the fastest man in the world, the best intercept dude, he's gone. And that's what it pretty much came down to. We were just so, so close to being in that final. And then seeing them, I think they went on and absolutely cleaned out Clermont in the final. Was like, oh, that was our opportunity to win my opportunity to win the Heineken Cup.
And because we've had Mike McCarthy on the podcast with us before, and he said this match and the Ireland New Zealand match where New Zealand scored in like injury time are the only two games he's actually cried afterwards. Mm-hmm. He was that upset.
Yeah, it was really tough to take. Like, it was, you know, especially me and Macca were actually really good mates, and we talk about this one quite a bit. And it was like, you know, we weren't there for the time of all the big Heineken Cup trophies. Like, it was right in between as like the rebuilding year, and you know, we were like, shit, that was our opportunity to win it, and it just didn't go our way. And we look back of like, you know, what could have changed or whatever, but you know, as rugby players, you want to win the big trophies, and to come so close was devastating.
And then once the season ends, you then move back to England with Wasps. Was that due to Sexton coming back, or was a move always on the cards?
Yeah, look, they wanted me to stay. But in my mind, I knew Johnny was only going for two seasons and he was going to come back. And, you know, I knew if I stayed, I'd just be second fiddle, or even, you know, because Madigan was there as well, so they wanted to try and develop him. So, you know, how much rugby would I play? And Woss came along, and Dai Young, you know, we'd played Woss a few times in the Heineken Cup as well, and obviously I played against him in the Premiership. So I knew they played an awesome style of rugby, and so it was a great opportunity for me to go and join them.
And you come in, you're a pretty successful team. Like, they've been used to making the playoffs and getting pretty far in the knockout stages of trophies. In that 16-17 season, you guys did amazingly well. Obviously, you finished top scorer. The team finished top of the league that year and then went on to the playoff final. What do you kind of remember about that 16-17 playoff or the Premiership final?
Yeah, again, what a final. I played it in a packed Twickenham with, I know it was like 28 degrees or something, sun was shining. And all I remember has been like that last sort of, within the last minute, I was thinking, geez, we've won the Premiership here, because Exeter were just sort of trying to milk a penalty pretty much. Didn't look like they were trying to set up for a drop goal. They were still sort of 35 yards out. And I was just like, our defence is just holding them. And I really thought to myself, because in the midfield, nothing was coming down our channel, because they were just zigzagging down the outside trying to get a penalty. And we're just like, oh my God, we're going to win the Premiership here. And then the next minute, the whistle goes and they get a penalty. And I was just like, oh, shit. Like, yeah, he's not missing this. And then we end up going to the extra time. And still, it came right down to the wire in extra time. And to lose so close like that was devastating, because we'd played some unbelievable rugby all season. I think we'd finished top of the tries, top in the league, and to not go the final distance was really gutting.
And I think you'd won Player of the Year that season as well, is that right?
Yeah, I managed to pick up a few personal trophies, which was pretty special.
And do you put that down to just your personal form, or did your style of play just kind of suit that Wasps team?
It was the whole team. We just played unbelievably well, and you know, the way we were playing, it just obviously suited the way I played as well. And it was just a real pleasure to be amongst that team. And you know, some of the tries we scored was just unbelievable. And you know, we had some pretty X factor players within the squad, but yeah, pretty gutting not to go the whole way, to be honest.
And when we move a kind of year or two later, you pick up a pretty horrendous injury. It was an ACL injury, wasn't it?
Yeah, playing in Athlone on a pitch that was about 2 feet of grass. We were playing Connor in a preseason game, and I remember going there, and we went and checked out the field before, and it's this lush as green grass. And I'm like, oh, sweet. And I was like, oh, surely they're going to mow the grass like before the game. And we turn up for the game and they still hadn't mowed it. It was like long as we're like, oh, okay, this is grassroots. But anyway, yeah, I was only on the bench. I was playing a few minutes. I think I was on there for about 14 minutes, and they just did like a little cut move, and I just went to turn back, and my studs just stuck in the grass, and my whole body moved, but my foot didn't. So all I heard was a pop. And I just couldn't run. And yeah, out 9, you know, when they said, oh, it's like a 6 to 9 month injury, it was like, I was gutted, because it was, you know, this is the first time I'd ever had a proper major injury. And it was definitely a learning curve for my mental capability, for sure.
And what kind of goes through your head? Because I think most players, I think you were 35 at the time, so like most players at that age, if they got a kind of serious injury, they would maybe start to think about retirement, which obviously you didn't do. So what kind of went through your head as you were rehabbing that?
Yeah, so obviously I was devastated at the start, but then I was quickly into thinking, well, hang on a minute, I still feel really good about my body and I've never really had a serious injury like this before. So, yeah, I'm not just going to quit in my first attempt. I really knuckled down and thought, look, I found out, okay, it's 6 to 9 months. And I was like, right, I'm going to try and get back as fast as I can. And we were fortunate and unfortunate with the team. We had quite a few guys had similar injuries. So there was a good group in the rehab group that pushed each other and you know, really tried to get back as fast as we could. And it was interesting, you know, of course you have your dark days and, you know, you have your good days. But I just worked really hard and I was really determined to get back as fast as I can and get strong and play rugby again because I absolutely love the game. And thankfully, I got back pretty quick.
Yeah, and that kind of brings us into to the season because the team struggled without you a little bit. And as you say, there were other injuries as well. And, you know, last season the team did struggle a little bit. And then we come into this season and Wasps have a pretty tough start. I think it was like 5 of your first 6 or 6 of your first 7 Wasps actually lost. So prior to the whole kind of COVID lockdown, things weren't looking too good. So what's been the change, you know, between, you know, the change in the team between kind of pre-lockdown and post-lockdown?
Yeah, well, obviously, yeah, it wasn't the great start. You know, we did have a few injuries and like other teams, it just started, you know, a bit tough to get our mojo going, but it was a big change. And obviously when Dai Young moved on, you know, that was a massive shock for all of us, you know, because he had brought pretty much all our team together. So, you know, a lot of us have been together for a long time. And it wasn't like it was so we were so close to getting the results. It was only just little things weren't going our way. And then obviously when Lee took over, it was his first game in charge was the Tigers. And that was a really tough week, Tigers away. And, you know, I think we bombed 2 tries and gave them an intercept try and end up losing. It was like, oh, is our luck never going to change? And then, you know, fair play to Lee and the way he was like, look, lads, just relax. Look, I don't want to put any pressure on you guys. Don't worry about the results. Just go out and play the game because you love it. And then I think we were going to put 60 odd points on Saracens. And it was like, and we, the boys are just playing with all this freedom. And then, you know, lockdown happened and we were just like, oh shit, we just got all this momentum and then lockdown happened. But in hindsight, it's probably the best thing that could happen because there were a lot of changes. Obviously, Lee and a few other coaches came in, the whole SNC staff got turned around. So it was like a new beginning for everyone. So they could put their stamp on things and you know, decide of how we want to go forward as a group. And the environment was a big thing they were talked about. They wanted us to be really relaxed and enjoying everything we do. And we worked really hard in that COVID on the off season. Everyone came back really fit and really wanting to put their best foot forward. And everything's just moved on from there.
Yeah, because you were by far and away the kind of form team in the league post COVID. You smashed a lot of teams. You smashed Bristol twice inside 4 weeks, I think. So you were just battering everybody in front of you. And when it came to the final, I think a lot of people still favoured Exeter. So what was the mindset of the team going into that game?
We were going down to play the way we play. We wanted to go down and win it. We weren't going to have any regrets. The only regret is the heavens opened and it was horrendous conditions and we couldn't play any the way we couldn't play the way we wanted to play, which was disappointing that we couldn't put our sort of stamp on the game. But I feel that we showed how far we've come as a group because we had to fully change the way we played, you know, literally just before the game. And I thought physically we really matched Exeter and we took them on their game and you know, came so close to getting the trophy.
Yeah, it was really tight, and like you say, the conditions were absolutely minging. So it was very tough for anybody to play rugby, but you guys pushed them really close. And I suppose that pushes us into the new season then. So I take it from the group perspective, you guys want to go for the title again. That's your main aim.
Oh, of course. You know, when we all play rugby to win trophies, and we're going to be doing exactly what we've been doing. And you know, we've only had 2.5 weeks off, so we're pretty much like it's a little mini break, and we're straight back into it.
And you're 37 now, is that right?
Yes, I am actually.
You've got, is it a 1-year contract you've signed with Wasps?
Yeah, I've got another year left, so into this season.
And what does the kind of future hold then? Do you want to keep going as long as you can, or are you already thinking about what you're doing after?
No, I'm really keen to see how the season goes, but at the moment I'm pretty keen to keep playing, and as long as my body feels good and my mind feels good, then hopefully someone out there will offer me a contract.
Good man. And even when the day comes, when you do hang up your boots eventually, do you want to stay in rugby as a coach, or do you want to just move away and have a break completely?
Yeah, obviously coaching is something I've always looked into. I do a bit of coaching at the moment with the team up here for the last 3 years, and I need to know Eds, but and I run my own kicking academy now, so I do a lot of that specific sort of coaching. If that's something that I move forward and do something like that, then I've been in the game for a long time now. It's, you know, it'd be pretty hard just to walk away straight away.
Yeah. And I just wanted to ask a quick question as well. Obviously we've talked about you playing for the New Zealand under-21s and the Junior All Blacks. Does that mean, because you played for the Junior All Blacks, does that mean that you couldn't play for either England or Ireland?
Yeah, it means I'm officially capped for New Zealand, which is pretty crazy, really, because the Junior All Blacks only lasted for like 3 years. That team doesn't exist anymore. And I played, against Samoa and Tonga. So I played two tests, and that's cup tied me, but that's how it is. And it's pretty unfortunate I didn't get to play a lot of international rugby, but you know, I got to play for the Barbars and teams like that. And so it's obviously not everyone wants to play international rugby, but I've been pretty blessed in other ways.
And obviously, had that opportunity arisen to represent either England or Ireland, I assume you would have taken it then, yes?
Yeah, for sure. It's playing international rugby. It's what every rugby player wants to do, testing yourself at the highest level.
And what was your Barbas experience like?
It was unbelievable. It was so good. Obviously, playing Ireland in Munster and beating them was awesome, because I played against so many of my Leinster teammates, and to get one up on them and in Ireland was just unbelievable. The whole week, the whole experience was just phenomenal.
Yeah, because we've had guys like Tim Visser and Ali Hogg on the podcast telling us about their Barbarians experiences, and it just sounds like a massive piss up, basically, just on the sesh for a whole week.
Oh, it is, and it just shows you though that. And I think COVID's actually taught us that you don't need to be having meetings for meetings and all this analysis on different teams. With the Barbars, you have 2 or 3 calls and that's it. You just go out and play rugby. And with COVID and how we had to, with the Premiership, how we had to have midweek games, so sometimes 4-day turnarounds, there was no opportunity to, like, look at other teams and see what they're doing all the time. So we just focused on ourselves. We hardly trained. We just literally, okay, we'll do the same moves. We'll just tinker them slightly, but we'll just play the way we play. And it just shows how successful you can be. I think we've gone down the route too much of just over analyzing a lot of teams and how we play and individuals, and you come a little bit robotic. Whereas in the Barbars, and what we were doing post-COVID, is allowing players just to play rugby. And you can see all the time the Barbas play unbelievable rugby. It's so exciting. So I think we've learned a lot from this COVID situation going forward.
Yeah, well, hopefully it allows teams to open up and express themselves a bit more, and we can see, you know, more exciting rugby like you guys have played.
Yeah, let's hope so. Everyone loves running rugby, don't they? Well, I think the weather's helped. You know, obviously we've been playing all through summer, so that's helped a lot. I think the score lines have been massive because of it, and I know they're never going to change to summer rugby, but I would if I was running the show.
Yeah, I agree. We're almost done. We come to the final part, the part everybody loves to see, which is the Ultimate 15. So hopefully you've been having a good think about who you want to put in.
Mate, I've been playing professional rugby for too long and too many good teams. I was trying to think of the Ultimate 15. It's impossible. Like, to leave guys out and, I've been looking at the some of the guys I can put in my team. I'm very, very, been very fortunate as a rugby player to play along some greats. So there's going to be a lot of mentions here, for sure.
let's go and see what you've got.
All right. So loosehead prop, John Arfoa. Played with him through my New Zealand schools and then right through Auckland Blues and stuff like that. But I also have to say Ken Healy and Jack McGrath were class at Leinster. But John Arfoa gets the nod.
That's good, because I'm an Ulster fan, and he was unbelievable for Ulster.
Yeah.
Such a good player.
He's phenomenal. And he's still going hard. He's same age as me. We're all the same age, so we always have crack when we're playing each other, that the old boys are still doing it. Hooker, I couldn't go past Kevin Mialamu. When I was with Auckland. And obviously, he's just, his leadership and the way he plays the game is just, yeah, he's one of the best hookers that have played the game. Tight head, pretty self-explanatory with Kevin. Tight head, I've gone Carl Heyman for obvious reasons.
Yeah,
one of the best tight heads in the world that's ever played the game, and good mate of mine as well. So he definitely is the tight head.
He was a good man to have in the pub as well, by all accounts.
Oh, he enjoyed one or two. he was a good drinking partner for sure. Second row, there were so many that sort of all together, but Joe Launchbury, I've put him in. He's, I'm just, every time he plays, he's just phenomenal at all. It's a lot of the unseen work he does. He's just got such an engine on him, and he's just such a good leader around the field. I had to put Launches in there. And no team is a team without Mike McCarthy. every team needs a Mike McCarthy.
He's going to love you for that.
I know, on and off the field. Macca, he's a real good mate of mine. But he's on the field, man. He plays the game so physical. And then off the field, he's mad at a box of frogs. But that's just him.
So Tim Visser told us that Mike McCarthy is hands down the weirdest guy he's ever met.
He's up there. He's definitely got a funny personality, which he's class, mate. He played awesome for Connor at Leinster and obviously Ireland as well. He's had a great career. Now,
back row, this should be interesting. Let's see what you've got.
This was the hardest to choose, to be honest. Some were pretty easy, but then, so blindside Jerry Collins, just an unbelievable player to play alongside, just so physical. He was just unbelievable and very sad, obviously, his passing. Number eight, Rodney Suialo, again, just an awesome guy. The man never seemed to sweat. yet his work rate was just phenomenal and just a great leader. Open side, it was a tough one again. I've gone with George Smith. His name even speaks volumes about what he's about. He was phenomenal for us at WAS and for that season. Even though I played with him for only a season, I played against him for years and I knew exactly what he was like. But then I had to leave out guys like Chris Marsoe, Shawnee O'Brien, Jamie Heaslip, Ashley Johnson. So, you know, it's the back row is, I've been very protected over the years by my back row.
Absolutely.
What are you up to? Scrum half.
Yes.
Yeah, so obviously I've been playing with Dan Robson at the moment and he's just been unbelievable. You know, his quality of play is class, but I've gone with my old mate that we started in the academy together and we started right through the Wellington Hurricanes and Piriwepu. I played with him for years and, you know, his skill set was just phenomenal. He was, his ability to read the game and dictate play was second to none. And you can see why he went on to play many, many times for the All Blacks.
Yeah.
Fly half, I've gone Danny Cipriani.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, people will probably say it's very interesting from me, but I've been playing 10 all the times I've been playing in teams, so it's hard to play with guys. But when he came and I obviously moved to inside centres, his decision making on the ball at the line is the best you'll ever see in the game of rugby. He can read defences, he can manipulate defences. His skill set is phenomenal. You know, with ball in hand, I don't think there's many better. Inside centre, I've gone Ma'a Nonu. Ma played outside me for a lot of years with Wellington and the Hurricanes, and you know what he gives is an all-round game, and he's physical, he's runs hard. So Ma'a's got my vote at 12. Now I'm sorry, I've gone for a three-way tie at 13 because I can't leave any of these guys out.
I assume one is Brian O'Driscoll.
One's Brian O'Driscoll. One's Conrad Smith, and the other is Tana Umanga. So if you tell me I can leave one of those guys out, then good luck.
Good God, that's incredible. Because Mike McCarthy had the same issue. He had a 10, and it was between you, Johnny Sexton, and Johnny Wilkinson. So we just put all three in.
Yeah, it's just like all those three guys are just the best 13s the world's ever seen. So, you know, I've been very fortunate to play with all three of them, and every one of them brings different skill set, but I couldn't leave anybody out, to be honest.
No, that's fair.
Left wing, I've actually gone, I there's two players I can't choose from. So it's Christian Wade and Joe Rokotoko. It's two electric players. Probably the two best left wings we've ever seen in the game as well. So obviously I could have put Jonah there, but I only trained with him. He ended up not playing in 2003 when I made the Wellington team. That was when he got diagnosed with his kidney stuff, so he didn't really play that year. But these two I played a lot of games with, and two good left wings, to be honest.
Absolutely. Just how big a loss was Christian Wade?
Yeah, he was a massive loss to us. You could see what he could just make a play out of nothing. His raw ability, his speed was second to none. And, you know, he can just change a game just in an instant. And it's really good to see when he went over to the NFL to see his first few touches just phenomenal. And that just shows what kind of athlete he is. And it depends how he goes over there. We never know. We might see him back in a rugby jersey, but I hope he really has a lot of success over there because he deserves it.
Absolutely.
Right wing, I've gone Charles Pietel. So I've moved him from fullback, but he's, again, just another athlete that's just, you know, he's one of the best in the world at what he does. He's awesome to play with and a nightmare to play against. So,
yeah, and another Rex Hollister lad, so thank you very much.
Yeah, a couple in there. Fullback, this is a tough one. I've got three guys bracketed, but two of them I only played a year with. And so the number one I got, Billy LaRue gets my vote at 15. Again, the way he reads the play and his work rate off the ball that not many people would see is just, you know, is so good. And his high ball skills, and he added so much to us at WAS when he played there. And he was just such a good guy and a good player. And the other two is Christian Cullen and Kirtley Beale. So it was pretty hard to leave those guys out. But you know, I played with Cully in his last game in Wellington, which is pretty special. And obviously Kirtley was only with us a season at WAS, and what he added was phenomenal as well.
No, that's a hell of a team. I think so far our two best teams were, I think, Matt Burke and then Mike McCarthy, but I think yours just edges both of them. that's an unbelievable team.
Yeah, I was looking at it going, geez, I'm pretty lucky to play along some of the greats of the game. And I've been fortunate enough to be, yeah, the era I've played in has produced the greats, and I've been fortunate enough, as I said, to play alongside them.
Absolutely. Well, that about wraps us up, Jimmy. So thanks very much for coming on. I'll let you get away and enjoy your day off. Best of luck to you and the Wasps, guys, for the season ahead.
Cheers, mate. No, appreciate it. Thanks for having me along.
And no problem at all. And when you guys rock up to Kingston Park this season, make sure you come say hello.
Will do. Will do. Now, looking forward to being back in the toon. Going to see the old stomping ground.
Excellent. Well, look after yourself, and I'll speak to you soon.
Cool, mate. Cheers. Thank you very much. Have a good one.
So that wraps us up for episode 11. Many thanks to our guest, Jimmy Gopworth, for joining us today and talking us through his incredible career. Thanks again to all of our listeners and those who are continuing to support the podcast. That support is much appreciated. Please remember to like, share and subscribe to the podcast across all of our channels, whether it's Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts or the Anchor Podcast app. You can follow us on Twitter to keep up to date with all of our latest podcasts as well. And we'll see you guys next time for episode 12.